Welcome to the Indisposable Podcast, produced by Upstream. I'm your host, Brooking Gatewood.
And I'm your co-host, Matt Prindeville.
Thanks for joining for another episode celebrating solutions to plastic pollution. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Indisposable Podcast. We have a very special show today where we will be talking about one of the biggest challenges I know we've all been frustrated with this last year when we've been forced to eat out a lot more, and that is plastic waste and takeout and delivery. So today's episode is a live stream recording that we did with three innovators and business leaders in this space. We have Keiko Nicolini from Our Cup and Ourware, Lauren Sweeney from Deliver Zero, and Paul Liatsakis from Sparkle. Matt Prindeville, our trusted co-host of the Indisposable Podcast and Upstream CEO, will be hosting this conversation. And we've had some people tell us that this was, quote unquote, the best hour and a half they have ever spent. Now, the hour is the part you're going to hear today, but the half is why it's worth showing up live for our live streams where we do speed networking for the last half hour. So you show up to the conversation and then hop on a Zoom call and we will facilitate you connecting with other people who are listening to those conversations. And people have been loving this. So if you're interested in participating in the live streams, go to our website, find us on social and follow us to find out when the next one will be. We do them every 4 to 6 weeks. And without further ado, we're going to go into reuse to go innovations in takeout and delivery. And I'm going to hand it over to Matt. Enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. We are so thrilled that you are all here. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Matt Prindeville. I'm the CEO of Upstream, and I'm also your host today. And I could not be more excited for the conversation we've got teed up for you. I want to start by asking you all to think about the last time that you got takeout for dinner or that you ordered a meal delivered to your home or your office. And I want you to think about all the single-use stuff that came with that order, right? The bags, the containers, the plastic cutlery wrapped in more plastic, the ketchup packets, the napkins, all this stuff, right? It's crazy. Our friend Tom Sietsema, who's the food critic for the Washington Post, you know, he used to go to restaurants pre-COVID, but when the pandemic hit, he started ordering all this food delivered to his house. And he decided to conduct an experiment. He saved up all the single-use stuff that came with his orders for 3 weeks. And he spread it out all over his lawn. And he said it basically covered his entire lawn. He said one meal for two people had 26 different single-use items with it. And this is just the normal, right? This is like, you know, how it's done 99.9% of the time here in the United States and around the world. But our friends on the panel are working to change all that. So these are the founders and leaders of innovative companies that are working to usher in a new reuse economy for takeout, delivery, events, and more. And so I could not be more pleased to introduce Keiko Nicolini, who's the Chief Marketing Officer and General Manager for Our Cup and Ourware. Lauren Sweeney, who is the co-founder and Chief Marketing Officer for Deliver Zero. And Paul Liatsakis, who's the CEO and founder of Sparkle. So what we're going to do is we're going to do some just quick little lightning talks with the panel, spend about 15, 20 minutes just in a conversation with the panel. We're going to save half the time for your questions. And then we've got a fun little speed networking opportunity at the end on the hour on another Zoom line that you're welcome to join us for. And if you want to meet some new folks and share what inspired you most today, we'd love to have you join us there. So without further ado, I'm going to start with Keiko. And Keiko, so, you know, just tell us a little bit about yourself, about Our Cup and, you know, where you're based and just for fun, you know, what's your current COVID food obsession?
Oh, my current COVID food obsession. Definitely Szechuan pepper, garlic, chili oil on everything for the win.
Love it. Love it.
Thanks so much for including me, Matt, and the Upstream team. I'm Keiko Nicolini, the CMO and GM of Our Cup and Ourware. We launched to market with a reusable cup system, specifically for the live event space, targeting single use and disposable cups generated from live events in North America. We initiated our market entry on tour with U2, with the Rolling Stones, Dave Matthews Band, and other really incredible artists who partnered with us to join in the mission to eliminate disposable waste. During the last year with live events shut down, we took the opportunity to develop some technology that we can implement with our cup system, as well as rolling out a new solution and product line extension for to-go-wear with Arware.
Oh, awesome. Love it. Cool. Well, Lauren, yeah, you're on deck next. Same questions here. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, about the company, and where you're based, and you know, what's your current food obsession right now?
So I'm Lauren Sweeney. I'm one of the co-founders and CMO at Deliver Zero. We're a network of reusable containers intended to displace single-use containers in the food delivery and prepared foods ecosystem. So we launched as a platform in November 2019 with 8 restaurants in Park Slope in Brooklyn, just to see if my co-founders and I were the only ones who, you know, ordered sushi and then stood in front of the recycling bins with our rinsed out sushi containers, wishfully recycling them, knowing it wasn't going to work. And that recycling itself creates untenable emissions. So we got started with this small cohort of restaurants. We found that people were as frustrated by the problem and as excited about the solution as we are. So our customers order through our site or our app and get their food in reusable containers that they can return the next time they order with us. So you can order some Thai food and return the containers to a sushi restaurant or to the delivery courier who brings your Chinese food. We're starting to get into allowing our customers to, say, order from other platforms in our reusable containers with participating restaurants, or for a restaurant partners to offer them to walk-in customers using a QR code. So we're really excited to expand outside of our own platform while keeping that a key piece. And right now we're active in most of Brooklyn, parts of Queens, and all of Manhattan. And we're really excited to grow into, you know, more of New York City, but then also outside of it. I focus on the customer side. I live in the East Village. With my 5-year-old, who's sometimes on our Instagram stories, people tell me they see her. And our food obsessions are the dumplings from Three Times, great Chinese spot on the Lower East Side, and these hand rolls and avocado sushi, as my daughter calls it, from Dowska.
Love it. Love it. That's my favorite part of New York. Oh, love it. So great.
Yeah, that's where we live.
Awesome. So, all right, Paul, you're last here. So Paul Liotsakis from Sparkle, you know, just same questions. You know, tell us a little about yourself, about Sparkle, where you're based, and, you know, what's your current food obsession?
Thanks, Matt and Upstream for having me, and hello, everyone. So I'm the founder and CEO of Sparkle Reusables. We are based in Alameda, California. We work all around the Bay Area. We're a premier supplier of reusables and a servicer of reusables in the Bay Area. We've been at it since, I think I launched my Indiegogo campaign in 2014 at the end of that year. So we've been on the ground doing pilot programs and working with cities, counties, corporations, event organizers. During the pandemic, we're supplying seniors and homebound seniors and institutions with reusables, and we do events as well. So we've been at this for quite some time, and we've learned a lot, and we're hoping to be helping others along the journey as well.
Awesome. What's your current food obsession?
That's right. Being from Mediterranean, I love wild greens, and it seems like right now, dandelions, fennel, fava beans are in season, so I'm trying to eat as many as I can.
So good. So good. Yeah, we've got all the wild. I live in Maine. We've got all the wild greens coming back into the co-op from, you know, from early starts and greenhouses. So it's great. Cool. Well, the first question I want to ask you guys is just to dig into the why, right? Like, why did you start these companies? What was the motivation that got you wanting to do this? And since Paul, you said you started, you know, your Indiegogo campaign in 2014, let's maybe start with you, because that's, I think you might be have the oldest company on the block here out of the three.
Yeah. You know, I come from the nonprofit industry in the environmental space. I was working in San Francisco for a company for many years, eating downstairs in a courtyard. And I was really watching the composting and the recycling programs roll out and show up at this building. And it was a really exciting time. I noticed the signs were going up about what you can and can't put in which bin. And so as the program rolled out, I was watching it day in and day out and seeing some issues come up, which were kind of surprising. The cross-contamination and the fact that after signs went up, it didn't stop. The chit chat around like the lunch, you know, bin saying, oh, just put it anywhere and they'll figure it out, you know? And I was thinking, who are the they? And I don't think they are figuring it out. And it was just really like cross-contamination galore. Yeah. And I was thinking there's gotta be a better way, or maybe this is not the solution. And being I had just gotten my MBA also, and it seemed like an opportunity came my way around maybe having a business in this space. So I thought maybe I should dabble into the reuse space myself and the zero waste space. And I had come from an organic food industry background as well as an energy and solar background. So I'm no stranger to environmental initiatives, put it that way.
I'm very familiar with that, you know, people just throwing recyclables in the garbage when the recycling container is right next to it, right? I mean, it's, yeah. Well, thanks, Paul. All right, Lauren, you are our next here. And, you know, why did you start this company? What was it that motivated you to do this?
So I think I kind of alluded to this in my intro, but my frustration in my personal life came from, you know, as a working single mom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn at the time, I felt like I needed the convenience that so many of us have come to rely on. Like, you know, being able to order from a wide variety of restaurants and stay there at my desk. I definitely didn't feel like I had time to say pack lunch or make dinner every night. That felt a little aspirational to me as an 80 plus hour a week kind of working mom. And yeah, but I also just like couldn't continue endlessly creating this waste. And I think that's just my personal experience with what's happening at a more macro level, especially because of the pandemic, which we didn't know what would happen when we founded this company. But we've gotten so used to convenience that we're not really recognizing this sharp uptick in plastic waste in particular that's come with it.
Yeah.
So we need a better solution. We need one that doesn't ask customers to pay extra or do extra. I think there's, you know, the few great folks who are willing to go an extra mile and, you know, drop something off somewhere or go out of their way. But if we want everyone using this solution, which we do, we're not just doing this for the, you know, self-identifying environmentalists. It needs to be easy and it needs to be inexpensive. So that was the pain point I experienced. And then I've experienced in the startup world. My last few jobs were in startups. So I'm approaching it like a startup person.
Yeah, we talk a lot about convenience and infrastructure at Upstream, you know, and I people probably heard me that have heard me say this, I apologize, but I liken it back to, you know, we're at this stage with the reuse infrastructure where we were kind of 40 years ago with recycling infrastructure, right? You couldn't recycle away from your home if you were lucky to have any home recycling, and a lot of the people that did it were, you know, do-gooders, you know, say saving away in a you know, cabinet somewhere. And of course now you've got recycling everywhere you go, and so we're at this, you know, early stage of building out the infrastructure for these reuse systems, and you guys are right on the front lines of getting that done, so it's awesome. So Keiko, I know that you weren't the founder of ARCA, but you've kind of been there for a while now and have been helping to grow it and conceive of the next iteration with the R-ware part of it and the software application and all that. So, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about just the motivations for the company getting started and also for you wanting to join.
Yeah. you know, we, our cup was incubated by an incredible agency and group of individuals at Effect Partners. And our founder and CEO, Michael Martin, has spent, you know, over 30 years working really at the intersection of, you know, trying to solve some of the world's greatest problems through engaging culture and business solutions, really drilling down on systems and how they need to change in order to lead us to better ends. In that work, he did, among other really incredible projects, he was the longtime sustainability advisor to Live Nation, and did all any single person could possibly do to incentivize, gamify, engage around waste management at the in live events, flashing neon signs that say, put your plastic here. And really, you know, after a decade, realized that recycling is super, super limited, really not a viable solution. And that was when, you know, the cup, the single-use cup, which is probably the most common article used in live events through concession and food service, became the holy grail to solve for. Myself, I grew up in New York City. I'm based here. I spend half my time in central Vermont. My grandfather was the commissioner of sanitation for the city of New York in the late 60s. And it's funny, I recently was forwarding an article that he'd been featured in to Miriam on your team.
Oh, wow.
Where he, you know, in the late 60s and early 70s was already jumping up and down and screaming and yelling about the failures of landfill and how they're going to deposition us as New Yorkers. And, you know, paired that with my parents who were restaurant owners here in this city. When COVID hit, I think it just became, you know, my karma to blend sustainability initiatives with hospitality. And we saw very clearly, not only was there an established increase in trend in off-premise and takeout dining already pre-COVID, right, but when the world became divided or labeled as essential or non-essential, and thank goodness our restaurants were identified as essential, that need to address to-go waste became just blatantly obvious.
Yeah, I always think about like what it would be like if your company said scale, you know, pre-COVID, right? You know, we would have been able to solve for all the disposable stuff that just has been churning through our economy and every other economy on the planet in the last year. But I know that it has created an urgency around. I mean, when we talk to our supporters and our members and our folks in our networks, you know, the feeling really concerned about, you know, just the amount of waste that people are accumulating. I think we're starting to really see it, you know, when you order stuff on Amazon instead of going to the pharmacy or the grocery store, or, you know, you're getting more meals delivered to your home instead of going out, like you start to just see the packaging pile up. Even in places like our home where we're really conscious about it, like I'm just kind of blown away at how many cardboard boxes are, you know, tucked away in the closet waiting to be recycled. So let's get into, you know, how you guys got started. Like, you know, so we know the why now, which is great, but, you know, how did you get started? How are you able to attract customers and kind of get yourselves established? And maybe we'll start with Lauren this time.
So when I decided to commit to this, one of the first things I did was sit down for a whole Saturday afternoon and just began to think about how this brand would live on Instagram, which you asked, you know, some people, they'd say like, that's so secondary. Like, why is the Instagram account the most important thing? One, I have an amazing co-founder who had lined up the restaurant partners and leads the restaurant facing side. I'm mostly focused on customer side, the brand. And two, because that's where, in, you know, my past experiences, it was like where you can really authentically connect with people. Social sometimes gets a bad rap for all different reasons, but the thing that I found really useful about it is you can create or become part of a movement, you know, just by being active, by opening this app and exploring people who have like similar interests to you, seeing what the conversation is, and then saying like, what can I lend to this conversation? And because, you know, so little has been done still, like right now, even with the three of us sitting here, so little has been done to address the takeout waste problem, that like when we started talking about it on social media and calling attention to it, it struck a chord really instantly, because we were coming into, you know, conversations with, say, the environmentalists of Instagram, who were like, you know what, we have not really been talking about this at all. And part of the reason it's not been talked about enough is because there's not solutions. It makes people feel guilty and then makes them say, I can't really do anything about it right now without changing my lifestyle. Pretty significantly, if you're a New Yorker who's ordering all the time, and I know people live a similar lifestyle elsewhere. So just getting on Instagram and being like, what can we contribute to a conversation in a real way? So it was, you know, me as a human being, as much as it was me as a company, us as a company. Awesome. In the beginning, and it remains so to this day. No one's really telling us what to say yet. let's not let them.
That's great.
Yeah, but there was just no one that we could, you know, bother. The only people we could bother with our posts are big plastic pushing single use as safer during the pandemic, and I'm ready to bother them a little.
All right, Paul. You know, how did you get started, and how did you find your first customers?
Yeah, you know, I initially licensed, I worked with a woman, Laura Weiss, who was the only person in the whole country doing this back in 2014, like I mentioned before. And so I licensed some of the work and concept that she had, and I promptly got to work in the Bay Area asking my network of companies, building managers, city contacts, like, hey, would you be interested in having this service? And I was really excited. I was amazed that I was ready to basically offer a service. They were more like, what is this thing? And and more like, why is it important? We have composting, and we just started with a great new compostable container that's certified by the city. And so what we realized quickly, we had to start doing a lot more education and outreach to explain the problem. Again, this was early on. But I was also really heartened by the reception I got from cities, some key cities around the Bay Area, and their recycling folks wanted to have an alternative and wanted to dabble into how to make it happen. So we kind of together wrote proposals. We worked together to launch and learn basically from small pilots. And then from there, I did the same with events. We contacted some event organizers, county street fairs. You know, we're talking kind of small events at the moment. And then food truck parks and food trucks. So I was slowly branching out. So by the time we were kind of done with this initial outreach, we had over 50 plus vendors in our network, 10 plus large buildings that had a system of a drop site. So we have drop sites around town, and just hit the pavement to get people to sign up and explain how it works. I mean, this was, again, early on. I've learned a lot of lessons and we've expanded a lot, but it was roll up your sleeves, write proposals, and get some funding.
Got it. That's great. All right, Keiko. So how did ARCUP get started? We know the why now, but how did ARCUP get started? And how did you get your first customers?
Yeah, so ARCUP started on tour with you two, which was really, really a great way to amplify and educate. Our approach is really a full scope approach. So before we even, you know, make any inventory or attend any events, we have a very, very strong commitment to education and campaign. I mean, really, really what we're trying to do here is affect consumer behavior and address and build infrastructure. Those are really the tenets here. So we had already implemented large scale activations catering to, you know, 20,000 people at a time with the CUP system, starting with education and campaign, and then working with operations team, implementing logistical solutions, engaging with marketers and sponsors. And then for us, we actually pick up all used inventory, wash it, sterilize it, restock it, and redistribute it. And we've been in partnership with Ecolab, really drilling down on solving for efficiencies in cleaning, and particularly cleaning the materials that we're working with, wanting to evolve, but you know, we have some limitations there. When we decided to take our ware to market, we knew that we needed to still rely on campaign. We knew we still needed to educate. We knew we needed to make it convenient and accessible, each to engage the system, and also, you know, echoing what Lauren said, not put the burden of the cost onto the consumer. We just can't do that for all kinds of reasons. As far as identifying our fastest way to market, we ultimately did it through collaboration. We identified a tech partner in Ted Wallace, who heads up a company called Ancora in Seattle. And even though it seemed a little counterintuitive to partner up with a competitor, our opportunity to create impact, especially through the lens of COVID, and really how COVID allowed us, I think, to re-examine priorities, to re-examine how things are done, it really made sense. And so through that partnership, we were able to get from concept to market, you know, inside of 7 months.
Wow, very cool. Very cool. All right. So my last question is really around scale, right? So you guys are startups and you're established in several communities and have partners and such, but you know, how do you plan to scale, and then what do you need to do it?
You know, we started as a service provider. That was our goal. And we've casted a wide net. So we have a lot of industries that we're dabbling in, from the, like I mentioned, homebound seniors, institutional customers, events, corporate campuses, food truck parks. So we're hoping to see if we can zero in on a segment that we can play, we enjoy, and we play, we can make a real difference. So we're eyeing that. Being a startup, you kind of have to have your tentacles in every aspect of the industry as it's growing, because it still is the Wild West, I think, in this space. We really need some policies to back us up as well. And having some enlightened leadership on the city level. I know that waste management contracts with the companies is the way our garbage gets picked up in our recycling. Right. I think there's a solution there, or a room there for reuse companies to be brought into that space and do it in a really enlightened way and new thinking, because a lot of the existing thinking, I think, is around an industry that has, that can use some innovation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome, Paul. All right, Lauren, same question.
So we are adding new restaurants every week. So we have one member of our team going out and onboarding restaurants every week. So our plan on the ground is in Manhattan is to continue doing that, add more restaurants across New York City, across all the boroughs. We are currently raising money so that we can continue our growth in New York, but also move into a couple of other cities. It'll be LA and Chicago will be the next cities we're in. I can't give anyone a timeline yet. I'm sorry. in case I made anyone excited. And we're working on some partnerships with bigger, like, national chains, other platforms, to build a network that can live, you know, anywhere, you know, restaurant food is sold, but then also prepared foods. I like to say food you didn't make yourself. It's the real industry insider term. Yeah. And then, as Paul was saying, the policy thing is huge. And in talking with people in different municipalities where a policy is in progress, or in some rare cases has already passed, what I've been hearing is that restaurant owners are a bit scared when they find out that they can't use the inexpensive stuff they've been using. So our program can be reassuring in those cases, because our like a container use through us actually costs the restaurant less than whatever the cheapest, worst for the environment stuff they were using was. So I think the fear when legislation passes is that they're going to have to switch over to, say, a compostable that's more expensive. And I could go off on compostables. But anyway, helping restaurants get the message that our solution is actually less expensive for them when that policy passes, so they're not, you know, scared about how their costs will go up, is important to us.
Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. We go off on compostables all the time. So love it. Keiko, same question to you, and then we're going to move to audience questions.
First of all, I am so excited that live events are reopening. I can like hardly stand it. It's so fun to be talking to the stadiums and arenas again, to be talking about going out on tour again. It's really, really exciting. And I've been pleasantly surprised and a little overwhelmed by the new level of acceptance and interest, especially at the concessionaires and larger venues standpoint. I felt, you know, before COVID, it was a lot of kind of really having to talk through the operational aspect of reuse and trying to sell on a sustainability initiative. And now I think just the world is ready and people are focused on what we as a collective and broader community can do, what we are able to do. I agree 100% that legislation around disposables is absolutely necessary, each in identifying who is responsible for this waste and also leveling the playing field from a pricing standpoint. We absolutely need infrastructure. That's what we're working on as far as building out wash hubs to sterilize and repack and redistribute at scale so that we can be a resource not only to ourselves, but to our other competitors and partners in any given market. We need finance. Right, whether it comes through impact investment or grants, and finally consumer participation, which I think we get ultimately through engagement and education.
Great. All right, so we've got a ton of questions here, and the first one is about product loss. how do you get customers to actually return your stuff? And I think I'm gonna maybe start with Lauren on that one.
Yeah, this is a great question and one that I get all the time. So we don't charge our customers anything upfront to use our containers. We do let them know when they order and they opt in when they order. We charge them $3.25 per container if the containers are not returned after 6 weeks. We have their credit card on file. We have their explicit opt-in. Fortunately, we almost never have to do that. I can count maybe 5 times in my head we've done it in the life of the business. We are not sticklers about it, so that's part of why it's not like the 6 week clock goes off and we charge. We send them a few emails saying, like, do you really have this many out? Do you plan to return them? So we're very soft on it. One, our customers are ordering with us because they know reuse is only more sustainable if the containers are indeed reused.
Right.
So we get good participation that way. And knowing that you ordered, a few things for your family, you have 4 containers and you're going to be charged $3.25 times 4 for those, that encourages a good return rate too. So we actually have almost all of the containers we've ever sent out have been returned. And then the handful that haven't, people sent their friend cookies in one. One person turned their stove on. It's really rare edge cases and mistakes.
And now you've got a $3.25 container that you just paid for and you're going to use.
Yeah. And the joke is like, the joke is on you if you keep it. I mean,
right.
People do want to keep them sometimes. There's one customer who's asked to be charged to keep them. The rest of the customers get that they can order again and they'll get the same containers. And we know you might be keeping your leftovers in them in between uses.
Got it. That's cool. Paul or Keiko, do you guys want to take a stab at that too? Keiko, say hand raise. All right, go for it.
Sure. So incentivizing return is a big, big part of what we're trying to get done here. Our approach has been twofold. One is, you know, creating as much convenience as is possible. So we have self-scan return stations at all of our partners' locations. We are right now driving off of a QR code platform, and we construct and customize a loyalty program and rewards program with each of our restaurant partners. So what we're doing is not only incentivizing the return, where when people bring their containers back, scan it in, they get rewards and points. We're also driving our customers back to the doors of our restaurants, which became really important, especially again during COVID, just wanting to support our restaurant partners, understanding some of the challenges that they were going to, and creating a reason to return and resell.
Great. I was going to say, very similar, we have technology that prevents you from keep getting more containers unless you have gone back to a drop site and return your QR code. Or like at Whole Foods, you punch in a dispenser, you punch in your code, so we know how many containers you have out. So I think tracking reusables is key. And also, during the pandemic, we're working with a lot of seniors, and we do a lot of education ahead of time about why it's important to do this and return them so we can deliver next time. And I found that the seniors actually are more on top of it and washing their containers and giving them back to us than a lot of the Gen Xers or Ys. Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, it's the library card, right? That system has worked very, very well. You get your fees shown up and time to return the books. Yep. All right. So, you know, some really interesting questions about interoperability of systems. And I know, Paul, you said it's a little bit like the Wild West right now, but, you know, in theory, you guys are going to be in the same markets, right, at some point. And, you know, have you given any thought to, or has there been any conversations about how proprietary systems can work together to share the collection, the transport, the washing, the infrastructure, or what are the barriers to doing so? And, you know, I might actually start with Paul with that one, because it sounds like you've been working with some folks in the Bay Area on this exact same issue right here.
Yeah, you know, I've seen it. It's funny, being the first one in the market, and for a long time it was lonely at the top in a way. You know, it was not. It's nice to have others, and that way you kind of know where you stand. And I also think the problem is so big, and the market is big. There's room for everyone. And I think collaboration is important, or co-opetition. I think if we have wash sites we have organized, and there's fees to pay for those, sharing some of those fees is not a bad thing for everyone. I think there's so many vendors out there. Some of us are using different containers. So maybe a restaurant wants stainless steel, or the community demands that, whereas we have plastic. And you know, I think there's ways to be in the same space and work together. And also we work with a lot of partners, nonprofits, doing some of the deliveries and pickups. And I think there's ways we can meet there as well in the community and work on some aspect of the business together.
Got it. Some other questions here. What are the key learnings and takeaways for successfully engaging vendors to adopt the service? I mean, I think first and foremost, you guys are like B2B companies, right? You're trying to get the restaurants and the concessionaires to adopt your service. So what are some of the key learnings and takeaway for successfully engaging them? And why don't we start with Keiko on this one?
Yeah, we sure learned a lot trying to deliver reusables to really enormous venues right out the gate, right? And it was always, again, you know, how can we make this work operationally for the concessionaires? When we designed Rware for restaurants, we knew that it needed to really present no operational obstacle whatsoever. So our system can be used by any restaurant, and we simply deliver inventory and they use it as they would any other container system, any other container whatsoever. Our directions to engage the program are on the container. It's really then a relationship between us and the user of the container, but lifting as much responsibility and facilitating as much ease of use at the operator level as is possible.
So I'm going to ask the question that I'm sure lots of people have got questions about, which is, COVID, right? Like, and how has COVID impacted your businesses? And do you guys have like health agencies breathing down your necks now? How have you interfaced with them around the health and safety issues? And let's start with Lauren on that one.
Thank you, Matt. So this question is kind of two-sided for me. In the very beginning of COVID, in March of last year, me and my two co-founders live in New York. We operate in New York, and our city was being hit very hard. We didn't feel safe operating for a number of reasons. And the reuse piece was only one part of that. Like one, we didn't know that COVID, I think even from the beginning, we had some sense that it doesn't spread via surface contamination, but there were so many unknowns. This is back before people were wearing masks. So I imagined delivery guys getting to work, having to go around the city delivering food, and just didn't feel comfortable operating, knowing how many people would need to interact with other people in order to deliver a meal. We went on hiatus for 3 months and felt really good about that decision. We came back when we felt it was well understood that COVID doesn't spread via surface contamination. And I stayed in New York the whole time. I saw the impact that making changes to our lifestyle had on the rate at which I was hearing ambulances go by my apartment. Like that was a sign to me, right? Like it was very real. It wasn't like numbers I was reading in the newspaper. It was, right in front of me. So anyway, we wore masks. We saw that the numbers were going down. People could operate safely and reuse was safe. So we decided to come back. I think that gives credibility to the fact that, we have now been operating again, because it says, look, if we didn't feel this was safe, we wouldn't be doing it. We get some pushback when we get a good piece of press. I'll get some really nasty chats in on our chat bot. Usually it's like right when my 5-year-old doesn't want to go to bed and an order is late and the customer is chatting in, and I get like the meanest messages from people who frankly weren't going to be customers right away anyway. Like a real, I don't want to say the news channel, but those types will be like, this is disgusting. You're going to spread disease. And like, we're not, one. And two, the climate crisis is the biggest crisis facing our generation. And I'm saying that at the end of a pandemic. This has been horrible, but the climate crisis is a bigger one. And we need to reevaluate our habits, not after COVID, not once it's done. Like climate change is here now and we need to be dealing with it. Now.
Thank you, Lauren. Yeah, so lots of interesting questions coming in here about, some people are asking about the costs of disposables versus reusables. Maybe can we dig in a little bit to the costs of, how you might approach a restaurant or a vendor and say, okay, today you're spending X, but tomorrow you could work with me and spend Y, right? And so maybe we'll start with Keiko on that one. And then I think this is probably good for all of you guys to answer this one.
For us, it's always been really important to offer a full scope of services. And what that does is really changes the dialogue around costs and what we're providing. So, in addition to containers, we're also providing pickup, drop off, washing, sterilization, campaigning, a platform for rewards and loyalty system, environmental impact reporting, and marketing toolkits. So when we start to really drill down on the full scope of what we're providing, it's no longer a conversation about this container cost versus this container cost. And that's in the restaurant space. In the stadium and arena space, we start to look at things like tipping fees and waste management costs that are mitigated. And then that becomes part of the conversation as well. So looking both upstream and downstream at costs and having a very honest evaluation.
Paul, you want to answer that as well?
Yeah, no, I totally resonate with what Keiko said. It depends on what industry we're tackling. Like, we've sat down with facilities managers and looked at their waste management bills. The way they're currently showing up, it's very hard to discern, you know, how much savings you're going to get by X number of disposables being diverted from that waste stream, and there's what the benefits are. Maybe this is a change in the eventually, hopefully, the way waste management bills show up. But my partner and I sat down and said during the pandemic, like, can we compete head to head with some of these disposables out there? Because we were seeing like a lot of the plastic ones in particular being used. And we know that those are on the upper end of the cost structure. I mean, there's no way we're gonna styrofoam, and there's some other containers there that if somebody's using those and they're paying 10 cents each, there's no way a reuse program can compete with that. And we're operating on razor thin margins. However, we notice that there's a segment of containers out there that we can go head to head. And we went to Restaurant Depot, did our research, and then found the providers that we could sit down and have that conversation about cost comparison. And that's how we have broken into the senior meal delivery business.
That's so cool. Lauren, what about you? I know you kind of alluded to this earlier, and I think that might have even provoked the question, but how do you deal with the cost issues from disposable streams?
Yeah, so there are two ways we work with restaurants. One is the way we started with, where we take a commission on their orders and we charge them nothing for use of the container. So we stock them up with containers at no cost. And then we take a cut of the order that is lower than what Seamless takes from them, what Uber Eats takes from them.
Wow.
And we're providing them with containers for free. So there's two ways that they're saving versus other delivery orders. You know, even if they're paying for Chow Now and other direct ordering platforms too. So we're only making them money under our platform. The other way we're working with restaurants now is allowing them to use our containers outside of our platform. So we're charging 8 cents per container use in those scenarios. I know one restaurant owner who has like family connections in China that help him get containers about that cheap. The rest are paying more than 8 cents. So the savings can be significant when they're paying, say, 85 cents a container or 50 cents a container. They're smaller if they're paying, say, 18 cents a container, which is another number I hear a lot. But either way, like, I can't tell you how many times restaurant owners have taken out a calculator in front of me. So they all have one right near the register and they're like, oh yeah, this is how much I'm paying. Yep, save money with you. And that's an important piece of our pitch to them. Obviously, the unit economics of the container is different under each of these scenarios, but both bring us to profitability at scale.
Right. So I'm going to ask, I think one or two more questions if we can get to them. And again, just concise answers. Maybe let us get to two questions. One is about policies. A lot of people asking about policies. We've got a lot of policy folks in our network here. You know, what are the policies that you guys need to drive your businesses forward? And maybe I'll start with Keiko on this one.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a super, super important aspect just in the reuse landscape overall. I think that legislation around the cost of disposables is very, very important. And again, really levels the playing field from a pricing standpoint. You know, also there has been great progress and there needs to be more around reuse legislation, what containers, where, and how they need to be treated and washed and sterilized and where, really making sure that our food and health code is in sync with, you know, reality, right? And can facilitate this kind of innovation.
Great. Paul, you want to go next?
Yeah, no, I very similar to Keiko, having enlightened policy that takes into consideration a reuse business and managing waste similar to an ongoing contract with a waste management company. I think that would reflect on where reuse is and should be going and the priority of it. And I think also not having undue burdens on some of the permitting from health departments. I work in the Bay Area with multiple cities, and some have permitting fees and health code, onerous additional health code things that maybe are not as important as maybe some others think they would be, because I think at the end of the day, sanitizing containers and having an existing commissary that follows certain rules and make sure it's in good standing with the health department is the key. And if you have that, you're good.
Awesome. Lauren, what about you?
I think incentivizing reuse through like tax credits could be a great starting point because it gives businesses a more positive view of reuse. That said, I think we need to tackle it from the other direction too and say like tax single use the same way we tax other things that are bad for people or the planet.
All right. Last quick question. You know, what's the vision for the future and, you know, maybe some other areas you could grow into like grocery delivery, for example, and we'll start with Paul this time.
Yeah. You know, just fine tuning. We've been in the restaurants, groceries, events, corporate campuses. And, you know, our vision for the future is there, should we continue in all these spaces? Is there a particular market segment that we want to zero in and run with it? Identifying that. And also, is there a role we play to help others get started? We've gotten a lot of inquiries from around the country and internationally even. And so we're kind of debating, you know, what a role we want to play in helping spur the industry across the world.
Awesome. Lauren.
So our goal is to create like a singular network of reusable containers that can live across like any food delivery platform, any grocery store, any coffee shop. So it's easy for both the businesses and the customers to keep track of what goes where. And, you know, New York to start, and then we hope to move into LA and Chicago. And then after we develop our playbook in those cities, we'll be able to move into other cities and ideally, you know, some suburbs and some smaller cities. So I look at places like, you know, Fairfield, Connecticut, or Cleveland, Ohio, and I think there's a huge demand in places like that everywhere.
All right, Keiko, last word, about 20, 30 seconds would be great.
So when we built our turn, the technology that is powering our cup and our wear, it's built both for RFID and QR code technology. So at this point, we can tag or chip almost anything and be able to track and trace that inventory, be able to communicate with whomever has it to convince them to bring it back to us. It had always been in our business plan to create product line extensions into food containers beyond just a cup. But you know, it's really smart reuse. And the technology around reuse really just makes the possibilities endless. It's really exciting.
Awesome. Thank you to our amazing panel. I love these companies. I'm so excited about the potential here. Thanks to the Upstream team for facilitating another great live stream. So thanks, everybody. Hope to see you over there. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, everyone who came today.
Bye.
And that's our show. If you like what you're hearing, help spread the word. Subscribe to the Indisposable Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Add a review, talk us up. Nobody spreads a message like you. The Indisposable Podcast is brought to you by Upstream, sparking innovative solutions to plastic pollution, envisioning a world without it, and empowering businesses, communities, and individuals to imagine and co-create this future with us. You can find resources mentioned on today's episode, as well as learn more about Upstream's work at www.upstreamsolutions.org. Follow us on social and join the movement. There's a better way than throwaway.